Our foreshadowing of our story about debt in the last fortnight has proved very timely. This week, there's been no getting away from stories about household debt, mortgages, home ownership. The IMF warned that Australia's dangerous level of household to debt ratio, that was a week ago, followed this past week by a reminder from the Reserve Bank that it's still escalating. This week, Treasury Secretary John Fraser told a Senate Estimates Committee that more young Australians are relying on their parents to help them buy into the property market. Moody's reported the number of borrowers falling more than 30 days behind on their loan repayments had risen to the highest level in 3 years. There was the smashed avocado debate, and this morning I noticed the National Australia Bank has compiled a confidential borrower's blacklist of more than 600 towns and suburbs where it's kept lending to property buyers because of perceived growing risks. Perhaps it has something to do with the way we view real estate in this country and its role in our identities. Maybe it's the catalyst for a whole suite of attitudes about how we belong. The question is whether real estate is still the safe and sensible investment it once was. Now, before we meet two specialists fully absorbed in this, let's hear the stories of two Australians I spoke to earlier this week who are prepared to sketch for us a little of their own attitudes to debt and borrowing. First to Phil. He's in his early 50s. He's ex-army. He's now a small business operator. He does own his own home. He's not afraid to be in debt, though for commercial, not residential real estate. But he has very strong views about borrowing, as you'll hear.
I don't mind being in debt, but I need to be in debt for the right thing. So I'm not cautious. If I see a good opportunity to produce or to procure income-producing assets where the interest is tax-deductible, I think I'm very happy to be in debt for that, yes.
So you've got a sort of a hierarchy of good, average and bad debt, haven't you, in your own personal life?
Yes, I do indeed. And I would define good debt as income-producing, tax-deductible assets such as shares or an investment property or perhaps a business. I'd say average debt is a mortgage, which most people in Australia who are in debt have. That's their biggest debt, and that's okay. And bad debt, my third category, and the one that I really try to avoid, is debt for cars and lifestyle things like a holiday or a jet ski. That is bad debt. And I would never borrow for those things.
So you do have debts at the moment, do you?
Yes,
and
I do have
fall
considerable debts.
You have considerable debts.
Yes, but all of it is good debt. That is, they are income-producing assets I've purchased with this debt, and the interest on that purchase is tax-deductible.
Okay, so that's the story of Phil. Let's hear from Paul now. He's a young man on a modest wage. He already owns a unit in North Queensland, which he bought when he lived there, and he can't sell it. Now he's back in his hometown of Sydney, where he's again aspiring to buy a small unit in the western suburbs for, say, $300,000 to $400,000. While a lot of his friends are paranoid about debt, he says, even hex debt, he's not, but he believes that he can use it to improve his life. So you came back to Sydney and you decided to go into another unit that you would own again rather than rent. Did you wrestle with that a bit?
I rented privately in Sydney for a while, then realised that I should work towards buying a place for myself.
So you again knew you had to go into another loan?
Yep.
A lot of people might have thought, oh boy, you know, two, didn't worry you?
No. I sat down with a pen and pad and a calculator, and I did the sums. I looked at my incomings, my outgoings, and reached a conclusion that I can't afford this. I'm first and foremost looking for a place to live and to have some security in that and some control over my living conditions.
By the sound of you, you're putting a pretty high priority on that, on getting a sense of control rather than renting.
Definitely.
Did you grow up with your parents owning their home? Like, you know, where do you think you got this idea that it's a good thing to own a piece of real estate?
Two things, really. The cost of rent will always go up in a capital city where it's desirable to live. And secondly, I've been disrespected by enough real estate agents to not want to rent and just think I'm better than that.
Paul, as you see, very strong sets of views. And they're just honestly a snapshot. We were hoping to have somebody who'd say, I'm going for it, come what may, and who exemplify the statistics, but we couldn't find anybody who was prepared to own up to that. So let's explore these issues in more detail with Rob Burgess. He's an author and journalist, now writing for the online publication The New Daily, and Dr. Danica Wright, who's a lecturer in finance at the University of Sydney, and her area of expertise is the real estate market. She's joining us via Skype. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Geraldine.
Hi, great to be there.
I just wonder very quickly what your attitude to, Paul and Phil were. First to you, Rob.
Well, first of all, I would just say that everybody's life and life situation is so different that you can't generalise across markets. But there's some really interesting things that came out of that. Paul says, as a sort of an article of faith, I suppose, because it's always been this way, that rents will always go up in the areas where you want to live. Now, what we have seen in the past two decades is rents growing a lot less quickly than the capital values of homes. In fact, in Melbourne, where I rent a place, I own a place, but that's another story, the rent is still very modest compared to the cost of owning in that area. So what we may see in the future is rents tracking incomes much more closely than house prices have done. And that article of faith might unravel for the first time in sort of 20 years.
Wow. What would you think, Danica, listening to both those accounts?
The thing I really loved hearing it was the two different ways of framing whether to make that debt decision. You know, to Phil, he has this nice black and white, it's either good or bad debt, seeming to be based on whether it's going to be income producing. And in his book, something where you're getting a capital asset at the end of it, as opposed to, you know, travel or something, which is going to be more sort of just consumed by the individual. From Paul's perspective, he sort of had this, you know, pen and paper and was weighing it up based on what his incoming and outgoing cash flow situation was going to be. And that's actually more aligned with what a bank would look at as being good or bad debt. Can you actually pay off what it is that you're trying to borrow?
Yes, that's what I was intrigued by, is people's shifting attitudes to debt in their lives. I mean, Danica, mortgages appear to be driving the increase in household debt in Australia, with the biggest debts in the world relative to our incomes. Why do you think Australians are prepared to go into debt at such exorbitant levels to buy real estate? What's the attachment?
This is something which, you know, sociological studies of our culture report on the fact that it's such a long-standing cultural norm. As a population, even though, you know, we're tracking towards a situation within the next decade where a minority of individuals will be investors in the housing market, there is still this sense that it gives you both social security and financial security. And when we look at government policies over the years, you know, recent ones that come to mind, like the First Homeowners Buyers Grant, they're all designed to continue to promote and encourage investment into housing and all of the sort of related then community structures that go with that.
Now, you just said something there. In the future, it'll be a minority of Australians who own homes. You're confident of saying that, are you?
If we look at where the statistics are tracking at the moment, the latest Hilda report a couple of months ago came out showing that we're now down to just over 51% of individuals owning a home or having some kind of investment
is that
property.
All?
That's right. And I mean, usually we think of Australia as being a country of homeowners.
Yes.
And you know, 76%, if we go back a few decades, that's the number. That's been tracking down. And the number we often see now is one which says that 65 or thereabouts percent live in a home that's owned. But that's a very specific way of phrasing it, because that's assuming that if you live with your partner and they actually own the house, or you live with your parents still and they are the homeowners, you're included in that percentage. When we actually go down to the individual Australian level, it's much closer to that 50% just over at the moment. But based on where the trend is going, it's going to be a minority within this decade.
My goodness.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that the overseas experience is so often like that. You know, Germany's often cited as an example where renting on 10-year leases and so on is the norm, and you go into the apartment, you paint it as if it was your own home, you can even make modifications to the home. Now, that sort of thing doesn't exist in Australia yet, but it may well be that that's where we end up.
But this is the point. I mean, that's a major social change that we have to witness, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about attitudes, and I agree with you. We have an attitude, but where does the attitude come from? It's not just the cultural thing. It's not just from watching Neighbours or something that we get this view of housing. We have a suite of policies in Australia which have systematically encouraged us into the property market. Now, I could talk about negative gearing, capital gains tax discounts and so on, but before we even get to that, the what we call extensive growth in the economy has driven this market. Every year, the Australian economy grows, you know, roughly, I think, 3.1% over the last 20 years. And we all say, well, that's trend growth. That's fantastic. If you strip out population growth from migration, it starts to look more like, I think, about 1.7%. And there's a similar thing happening in house prices, which is as long as we pump more people into Sydney, we pump more people into Melbourne, it forces prices up artificially. So they've almost artificially pumped the housing market for 20 years. And now if they dare to stop pumping, everything could collapse.
And I think you were writing that we know that prices are going up and people overtly worry about them, but the amount of debt is too, and yet incomes have started to plateau. And it wasn't always like this. That's what you remind us of.
Well, look, I remember in my 20s, I'm 45 now, in my 20s we used to discuss housing, and my friends and I would say, when are you going to buy a house or a flat? We used to say, well, you times your income by 3.5, and that's roughly what you can borrow from a bank. Well, that shot up before the GFC, they got up to 7 times. Mm. But the point is that if there's ever a reason to borrow more than that sort of rule of thumb, 3.5 times your income, it's because you think your income is going to dramatically improve in the future. Now, we saw that happen because we had the mining construction boom. Nationally, incomes went up, and people who stuck their necks out a bit and maybe borrowed at 5 times their incomes were breathing a sigh of relief and saying, "Whoa, that's okay. I borrowed a bit too much, but it's okay now. I've sort of inflated my way out of trouble." Now, that there's no mining boom in the pipeline now, so if you're borrowing at those high levels now, you could be in quite a lot of trouble.
Let me just tell listeners that that's Rob Burgess from the New Daily now, writing for the online journal New Daily, and Dr. Danica Wright is with us, who's a lecturer in finance at the University of Sydney, and we're discussing modern attitudes to debt. I wonder, Danica, I noticed that a man called Jackson Stiles wrote recently in the New Daily that it's time to think more like the World War II generation in order to protect against a potential killer debt trap. As the new data suggests, many are unprepared for money emergencies. Do you agree?
Look, I think there's this fear of missing out. You know, FOMO is what's going to be out there. Just then Rob was saying, you know, the conversations in his 20s with his friends were about, oh, when's the right time to buy? The conversations people in their 20s now are having with each other is, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to buy a house. Mm-hmm. And lamenting that fact, or looking at, you know, how much can they borrow, and not framing it as how much should they borrow, just so that they can get into the market and do all those things that we heard, where it is about the security and control that home ownership gives you. So I think, you know, it's a far cry going back to sort of our pre-boomer generation and their attitude to savings and debt, especially when we've got such a very different landscape now when it comes to access to borrowing and what banks are prepared to do, and the fact that we have, as a population, typically dual-income households.
But also the old rule of thumb used to be that you didn't really, anyone who spent more than 30 to 35% of their income servicing their housing finance was heading for a fall. I don't know whether, is that abided by these days, Danica?
Based on what we look with the numbers, you know, if we're talking about, you know, the total household debt to post-tax income across Australia being, you know, up around 180 now on an annual basis, then it would seem that people aren't abiding that rule at all.
Well, see, Chris Richardson, you know, from Deloitte Access Economics, is a very well-quoted commentator, came out this week and said he actually thought property could become the, quote, worst investment in the coming decades because, you know, one of the things we haven't mentioned is capital gain, capital growth. People may not think their incomes are going up, but they're pretty sure, quotes, the capital gain will go up. And he's really warning about that, Rob.
That's not the same for all investors, of course. I've identified an older group of investors who've done very well in the property market perhaps they move out of town to a, you know, seaside resort, that all that sort of thing, that's great. They've got a bit of spare capital and they will put money into a property knowing full well that that the capital is at risk, because they're not buying capital growth, they're buying an income stream. It's like an annuity in a way. You buy a two-bedroom flat because you know that it will keep paying you an income, which will be related to economic activity through your retirement. And bank managers have said to me, yes, they look across the desk at older clients who say, well, we don't really care about capital gain or even a capital loss. We just want the income stream. Thank you very much.
Danica?
Yeah, well, I think that's tapping right into what's happening at the moment. When we look at, you know, that classic generation of boomers who are either entering or are now in retirement, they've benefited from, you know, pretty good capital gains on their, you know, primary housing. If they're now empty nesters looking at that sea change and using that spare cash to then buy other properties and get those income streams, that's a really compelling argument when they've lived through and experienced that knock that their retirement savings took through the GFC. So the safe as houses idea in the current low interest rate yield market that other investments, you know, seem to be offering, makes real estate just such a compelling and known and trusted investment alternative.
Very interesting indeed. Rob Burgess, thank you to you.
Thanks, Geraldine.
And Dr. Danica Wright, thank you to you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
And Danica's from the University of Sydney, Rob Burgess from the online publication The New Daily, and your responses next week.